When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
Hey everybody, welcome to Two Out the First. It is January the 8th, 2024. We got a full week in the books of the year. We started a new one this week. I'm Ryan Ballingy. Thanks for being here. We've got something to talk about related to Patrick Reed, with probably some snickering involved. And then we've got the results from the Century, which I thought was a compelling tournament. We'll talk a little bit about them, but also a little bit about Kevin Kisner in the booth and what that could portend for NBC Sports coverage of the PGA Tour moving forward. First, we're presented by our friends at Swannies. Check them out, swannies.co. Use that promo code GolfNewsNet25 to save 25% off your first order. They have great stuff for wintertime, and soon we're going to be getting into we're going to be starting thinking about spring soon. I know we've been talking about winter for about 6 weeks. Spring is right around the corner. We are, and I know I'm calling this a little early, but just when you get to like March 1, you know the good times are coming. And that's when you start to stock up. But that's coming down the pipe. But in the meantime, if you need good stuff for those cooler days or colder days, swannies.co, great looks, 25% off GolfNewsNet25 is the promo code. All right, I would like to start with Kevin Kisner, NBC Sports. It won't take as long as the other segment relating to Patrick Reed, and it'll be a feel-good show today. So, Kevin Kisner was in the booth for the weekend for the Century, and he I thought, did an excellent job in his role. His role was not, and it didn't seem clear that he interpreted it as any other way. His role was not to be Johnny Miller or Paul Azinger and sound like a television experienced, somewhat refined voice trying to offer full picture analysis, but also yuck it up with Dan Hicks, like two people who've known each other forever. That wasn't his job. That was Kurt Byram's job, who was in the 18th tower. And Kurt Byram does a great job. I like Kurt Byram. He does a good job commentating. He offers a steady voice without really ever going over the top, but he also doesn't say anything stupid. He's the guy that you want there to be a steady hand. He's not particularly outstanding, and he's nowhere near bad. He's a solid B+, and that's all you can ask for most of the time. In my lifetime of watching golf, thinking about the people who have had the 18th tower. You've had more turnover on CBS because Ken Venturi, and then you had Lanny Watkins, and Lanny just didn't work out for whatever reason. And then you had Nick Faldo, who was in there forever. And I think people will kind of like Faldo's time in the booth more as he gets away from it. And then you've got Trevor Immelman the last couple of years, who I think, is lovely. He does a great job. I really enjoy him in the booth. And then on the NBC side, you've had really two people, Johnny Miller and Paul Azinger. Azinger's time is done. Azinger wasn't as good in the NBC booth, nowhere near it, as he was when he was in the ABC booth with Faldo. With that three-man booth with Tirico and Faldo and Azinger, man, that was probably the best booth I've ever experience as a golf fan, as a golf watcher. I really like that. I mean, on the PGA Tour. Renton Laidlaw, I mean, he could call golf forever by himself, and I would be happy. But On the PGA Tour side, that's it right there. That's my gold standard, is Tirico, Azinger, and Faldo, and kind of like the early mid to late 2000s. Just fantastic. But NBC's at this point now where they have to identify who their new 18th tower analyst is. And I don't think they have a clear winner yet. There isn't a clear pick. And I think they went to Azinger last time around because they didn't have a clear winner then. But they knew Azinger was available. He would be willing to do it. And he's an opinionated guy. They wanted someone in the vein of Johnny Miller that had opinions and wasn't afraid to share them. And for all of Azinger's flaws in his run with NBC, he was not afraid to share his opinion. How he communicated that and what he actually said, not so great. So NBC has to decide, do they want someone in that lineage? They want someone who's highly opinionated and may sometimes seems to harp on pressure a lot and sometimes just kind of goes off the rails. Not horribly, but to the point where you're like, what are you even trying to say? That happened with both Johnny, especially toward the end, Johnny, and Paul Azinger. So I think they looked for some of those qualities in Kevin Kisner. That's why they had him come into the booth. Kisner's getting toward the end of his playing days. He's still going to play probably 25 times this year on the PGA Tour. It's not like he doesn't have status. I mean, he was not too long ago, he was a top 50 player in the world. But he knows, and he has said repeatedly over the last 3 or 4 years, when he gets into the media center, he's older. He doesn't hit it as far as these guys. It is going to be tougher for him to keep up. There are only certain places where he can do that, and if he doesn't do them there, he's in trouble. So for him, making his 300th start this week, by the way, at the Sony Open, this is a transition period. He's starting to think about, do I want to continue playing the PGA Tour? Do I want to go into broadcasting? How long do I have to survive out here to try to get status on the PGA Tour champions? You have to have a minimum of 5 PGA Tour wins to get status. So that's an important figure. And that really doesn't even get you a whole lot, to be honest. So Kisner is a guy who's clearly had opinions. He's clearly been willing to speak his mind into a microphone. He's done it pretty often with the Foreplay folks over at Barstool. And I think for that reason, they also went to look at him because he connects with an audience that's a little bit different than the traditional golf viewer. They're a little bit younger. I don't know how much younger, but at least a little bit younger. And they wanted him to come in and kind of be him. Just say what he thinks. I thought he did a great job. Really enjoyed what he brought. He offered some good technical analysis of things going on the golf course, which is what you want from an analyst. And at the same time, he offered a little bit of snark. My favorite line of his when he was looking at Jordan Spieth, who wound up missing a 3-footer, but he's agonizing over this 3-footer because he kind of has, almost has the putting yips inside 6 feet, but the way Spieth's stroke changes from inside 6 feet compared to outside is staggering. The amount of wrist break that he uses, oh my gosh, it's painful. But they're kind of, not making fun of, but kind of trying to cajole Spieth from afar to get him to hit this putt, and then he misses it, lips it out, and Kisner goes, just knock it in. It's just a 3-footer, bud. Like, that kind of attitude is what you need from the 18th tower person. And I think that you need someone who's willing to call it like it is. And you don't necessarily have to be mean about it, and I don't think Kisner was being mean. I mean, he was just calling it what it was. He would say that to Spieth's face just the same as he would say it into that microphone if they were playing in a round together. And that, I think, connected well. If you're willing to tell stories, if you're willing to reflect on your time on the tour and try to offer that as a backdrop, as a basis for your analysis, I think that's good. I think we've learned with Trevor Immelman, there is a benefit to not being too far removed from the PGA Tour. Whether that's Immelman being a guy who was the President's Cup captain and was dealing with those players on a week-to-week basis, or being someone who just plays part-time. You're close enough to the tour that you know some of the up-and-comers. You've interacted with some of them. You have some intel on them. Maybe you've played with a practice round. All those things are better than being 20 years removed from the PGA Tour and just showing up and talking, because golf has changed and golf will continue to change. So I think the further away you get from playing on the PGA Tour in terms of years, it's not that you lose touch. I mean, competition's still competition, but you lose touch with the personalities and their stories and maybe some of the modern ways of doing things in professional golf. So Kisner represents somebody who could be a touchstone to modern golf. I think that's good. Now, does he want to do it full-time? I don't think he does. I don't think he has that interest. I think he enjoyed what he was doing for the couple hours that he did it over the weekend. But I don't think he's ready yet. It doesn't sound like a guy who's ready yet to do this more than a handful of times a year. Maybe 10. That's fine. Which sparked an idea in me that I tweeted about, X'd about, whatever it is, at Ryan Ballengee, if you want to follow me. And here's what I came up with, my reaction to all of this. NBC Golf Channel needs a permanent 18th tower guy, but I think it would be pretty cool to have a rotating cast of players be the third person in there to offer what Kevin Kisner did. Great stories, analysis from a current player, and a different vibe. And then DJ Piatowski from the good folks at No Laying Up responded and said he said the same thing on their podcast, that the idea of having a rotating cast of 18th Tower folks would be a good thing. And I think you could then, if you were NBC, keep Kurt Byram in the tower, because he's steady, he's experienced, he seemed to be a calming, helpful influence for Kevin Kisner while still being able to participate. And he and Dan Hicks could both set up that third person, the rotating third person, to do their best. And that third person could change from tournament to tournament. They could do two in a row. NBC is in a unique position compared to CBS. CBS airs the overwhelming bulk of the PGA Tour schedule. NBC doesn't. They do this event, they do Sony as kind of their crew, and they do Amex as their crew. But it's not really the full deal for the last two. And then they take over in the Florida swing, and then you see them again for the playoffs. Like, they're not doing tons and tons of golf. So if they're not covering a ton of tournaments with their A crew, then they have an opportunity with the number of events that they do to just have a rotating cast. Go to the tour and say, hey, we'd like to have a different player every week. Current player. They've got to be able to speak honestly, and they have to have that green light from everybody. They have to be engaging, and they've got to be willing to commit the time. And the PGA Tour could say to these players, in exchange, we'll get you out of a pro-am or two pro-ams or something if you go into the booth and do it for a weekend. You don't even have to be playing that tournament. You just show up and talk and leave. And that would almost be even better. And I think there are a lot of benefits to this, other than for NBC Sports to not have to hire someone new to be the 18th tower person. So you keep Kurt Byram, you have the rotating slot, you get a fresh voice in there every time. Maybe for some of the lesser known tournaments, you try to get better known players. So you try to get a star, or you try to get a legend. I tweeted to DJ. I would watch. So there are some tournaments that NBC does that aren't the best. They're not as highly sought after or watched. They're not bad tournaments. They're just not, they don't have the same attention. The Cognizant Classic, which used to be the Honda Classic, is one. And then, I mean, that tournament would be so much more interesting to me as a viewer if you told me, let's say, Lee Trevino was going to be covering the weekend. And he would just be in there telling stories and having fun. I would watch specifically to hear from him. And I would really enjoy it. And people, I know there would be people who would watch that. And I think that could be a winner from that regard. Then think about the Valspar Championship. Another tournament that is enjoyable to watch. And it is a nice event. And typically it overperforms, I think. However, you might be able to get some more viewers on if you could have a current player come in. Again, they're in Florida, so they're all pretty close. It's a drive for most. Have them come in, BS, and have some fun. If you told me Max Homa was going to be in the booth for a couple hours in a random event, I would watch and listen. I can't get enough Max Homa. He's lovely. Do it for the Arnold Palmer Invitational. Have Ricky in the booth. I mean, Ricky might not be the best, but try to identify players that could do it. They just don't have that many events on NBC where they've got to have a permanent staffer to do the 18th Tower. So, until you identify the person that you really want or that everyone loves, do this. I would be very happy with that. I don't think Brandel Chamblee is going to get the job in that role. I don't think anyone really wants him in that role. People who like him, they want him at Live From. There seems to be some kind of backlash against Paul McGinley. I don't know why I like him, but he's also a great foil to Brandel on Live From. Keep that together. It's the best TV Golf Channel does. And then you could have David Duval come in. You could have Justin Leonard come in. Those guys are good tryouts. I personally would love Jeff Ogilvie to get a run and to do it, but we'll see what happens there. All right. Now, second story. I realized the first story was fairly happy. Second story is going to be a little gloaty, perhaps, but this is, I think, a good one to go out on. So, if you'll recall, Patrick Reed, and represented by his attorney, Larry Klayman, filed two separate defamation lawsuits. There was a lawsuit originally filed by Reed via Klayman in Houston, in U.S. federal court. And they withdrew that and moved it to Jacksonville. And they moved it to that district because that's where the PGA Tour is based. And many of the organizations and people which they sued are kind of relevant to. So in the first suit, they filed suit against Gannett, which owns Golf Week. They filed against Golf Week. They filed against Doug Ferguson, who's the Associated Press golf reporter. Shane Ryan, who's covered golf for different publications, but now he's at Digest. They have gone after, Damon Hack, Brandel Chamblee, Eamon Lynch, in different parts of that lawsuit. And in that first lawsuit, Reed sought $750 million in damages with the claims that these reporters and outlets were writing and saying and showing things about Reed that were untrue, with a conspiracy to undermine him in his career in LIV and hurt his family and all of this stuff with malicious intent. And then filed a second lawsuit against another set of defendants that included Bloomberg and Shane Bacon for some reason and some other folks that I don't all remember all 18 defendants at this point between the two lawsuits. But that sought another $250 million filed in the same court. Now, people who read those lawsuits, and I read the lawsuits, and you could kind of tell that this was a slap lawsuit. Slap is an idea of filing a what would be considered a frivolous lawsuit with the intent of trying to get someone to not criticize another person in public. Basically a frivolous lawsuit. And that was the initial read. This isn't going to go very far. And that was what wound up happening. The judge in both cases, Timothy Corrigan, dismissed the cases not once but twice. The second time happened in September and applied to both cases, basically saying, "Yeah, I mean, maybe some of the said maybe some of the coverage of Reed was a bit over the top or even a little too negative, but it didn't get to the level of defamation. Didn't even get close, because a lot of the things that were written were just based in fact and based in reality, and then tack an analysis onto it. So Corrigan said, you know, that while the tone of all of it may not have been 100% above board kind of deal in terms of how he would view it as a consumer, that didn't veer into the territory of defamation. Defamation is extremely difficult to prove. It is a very difficult lawsuit to win, because you have to prove, as a public figure, even more malicious intent with to harm. And while there may be plenty of people who don't like Patrick Reed, it is a very high standard to prove that the coverage of him was designed to negatively impact him and his family and his ability to make money. And beside all of that, the proof is in the pudding. He was able to make money because he signed with Liv for a large sum, whatever that was. So that whatever coverage of him there was didn't impact his ability to make money from Liv or currently in Liv. That's just how it is. So Timothy Corrigan went ahead and dismissed both lawsuits. And using the appeals process, there was an appeal to the notion that Reed as the defendant might have to pay the court costs and legal fees and attorney's fees for the defendants, because that is a typical motion that happens in a slap lawsuit, or frankly in a lot of lawsuits, but especially in one of these, where you go, okay, you made us spend lots of money as the defendant or defendants to fight back against this charge. You can't do that. You need to pay back our court costs. Because you can hypothetically use lawsuits to bully people and drive them into bankruptcy as individuals. It can be done. And it's not just related to this type of lawsuit. It can happen in all kinds of facets of the legal system. And that only works if you win. If you don't win, and in this case, the suit ended fairly quickly because Timothy Corrigan ruled that it was not viable, that it was to be dismissed with prejudice, so he can't refile it. That if that happens, then you know your legal fees don't get quite as high. You still rack them up, but they're not as high. Versus perhaps a non-slap suit, or a suit that's not as easily deemed in that category, then you're spending lots of money on legal fees. And those you can't recoup unless the judge rules in your favor to get those fees back. So Timothy Corrigan ruled last week that the defendants, at least in the first suit, I don't know if this applies to both suits, but I'm pretty sure at least in the first suit, maybe he's still doing the second, that Reed has to pay the legal fees for all of those folks and the attorney costs. And Reed has appealed, and they're going to try to appeal this to a higher level of federal court, and that will take some time. But he has until February 23rd to respond. So what will likely happen here is the appeal will take a little while to file, then they'll run it, and then who knows what happens at that next level. So hypothetically, if you get the right judge that feels sympathetic toward Reed, that they may overrule that. Maybe. But then that starts another appeal that just kind of keeps going. The point here is to try to avoid having to pay the fees, right? At a certain point, you're not going to win the case, but you don't want to pay the legal fees for all these people because you have 18 defendants. Many of them, I assume that at least the corporate entities obviously have their own attorneys in-house and probably private, third party. So they racked up probably plenty of money that they could get paid back upon. And then the individuals, depending on who they are and how they were represented, they may have had corporate attorneys or corporately supported attorneys backing them, as opposed to personally hiring those folks. Shane Ryan would be in a unique position because he, I don't know if he's an employee of Digest, but he also wasn't sued in that capacity, so I'm not really sure how that worked out. And I'm not going to necessarily ask. Eamon Lynch is an individual who works for Golf Channel and Golf Week. I don't know his employment agreement with either. I don't know if it's an independent contractor deal or employee deal, if they would back him. But no matter what, all of these people and all of these entities racked up quite a bit of legal fees. And depending on how they choose to present those fees collectively to the judge, to Timothy Corrigan, it could rack up a lot of money. It could be a lot of money that Patrick Reed has to pay, assuming that the appeal is not in his favor. And it doesn't strike me one way or the other how it's going to work out. But based on this, I would guess this is it's a large sum of money. It could be a seven-figure sum of money in the end. But we'll see what happens and what's filed. So the original intent of this suit, because even if Reed had won, he was never going to get $1 billion. That was never going to happen. But the intent was to stifle criticism and perhaps make some money. And unfortunately, neither of those things is going to happen, probably. And it's going to cost him more than he probably imagined. And that's even if Larry Klayman works pro bono. And I have no idea how that arrangement works. They don't want to speculate on that. So this was a big deal. And we don't typically delve into court stuff, but this kind of relates to my line of work. And I think in the end that Reed is not going to come out ahead here, barring some kind of significant change in an appeal. So there's that. All right, this week we've got two tournaments, really. We've got the Dubai Invitational on the DP World Tour. Rory McIlroy's playing, Tommy Fleetwood's playing, Adrian Meronk, Ryan Fox, Nicolai Højgaard. Good field. Five top 50 players in a 60 player field. So very short field, $2.5 million purse. Just something to start the year because they shifted the Abu Dhabi tournament to the back end of the year. And they wanted something to lead into the Hero Dubai Desert Classic, which is next week. The PGA Tour, we've got the Sony Open in Hawaii, as mentioned. We've got our Monday qualifier today. Korn Ferry Tour, Monday qualifying today. They have tournaments getting ready for the events in the Bahamas. So those are coming up. They're doing that today as well. If you have any questions for me, get a hold of me, ryan@thegolfnewsnet.com. I'm on X, Twitter, Threads, Instagram, and Blue Sky at Ryan Ballingy. I'm on Facebook and YouTube at Ryan Ballingy Golf. Back with another show tomorrow, Monday through Friday. We're trying our best to do them this way this year. Very excited about it. Nice to have all of you on board listening to the show. Please tell a friend about us. Leave us a review. It helps the channel and helps the show grow. Thanks for listening. We will talk to you tomorrow on 2 Off the First.